Patience, purity, and perseverance. Patience? I can understand. I know what it means to be patient. Even if I'm incapable of being patient, it's not hard for me to understand what patience is. Perseverance. Perseverance also I can easily understand. Even if I'm incapable of it, perseverance isn't something hard to wrap one's mind around. But purity. From where comes purity? Patience and perseverance, something maybe we as humans can aspire to. Purity, is it possible? All of this was racing through my mind. Can one aspire to be pure? After so many years, don't we soil ourselves with bad thoughts and bad feelings? Is it possible to undo all that we've done to soil our purity? All of that was racing through my mind. And then Swami asked us, "What is purity?" Swami asked. Again, none of us were prepared to answer, so Swami offered the explanation. Selflessness. Purity means selflessness. The secret to my power is selflessness, boys. It is selflessness. From selflessness comes my purity. I have no desires, no wants, from head to toe. I'm completely desire-free. That's the secret to the power and majesty of Sai. Selflessness. Dear brothers and sisters, on this Holy Ladies' Day, November 19th, I would like to talk about selflessness. Selflessness. Ladies are naturally endowed with the power of selflessness. It comes natural to ladies, and less naturally to men, perhaps. But to live for others without thought for oneself, the way ladies raise children, the way ladies serve their families, the way ladies take care of their helpless men, it's a divine power. It's a divine principle. Selflessness. And something we can all aspire to. It's something we can practice. It's something we can grow and cultivate in ourselves. What Swami wanted us to understand is that we can be like Him. He's not something different from us. He's only one of us. He's just in better shape than each of us. But no difference. Swami was always encouraging us to be like Him. I've taken human form only so that you will aspire to be like Me. Only so that you will feel kinship, closeness, relationship to Me. If I come down with blue color, four arms, holding discus, conch shell, and other things, He says you'll put Me in a museum and charge admission. So better I come down and look like you. Though my nature is not though my nature is something more, I come down like this so that you can feel relationship to Me and aspire to be like Me, because I am like you. Selflessness. So on this Holy Ladies' Day, I would like to talk for a few minutes about selflessness. In fact, if we examine our own lives, if we examine our own surroundings, we can trace so many of our problems and difficulties back to selfishness. Selfishness, if we examine, explains a great bulk of what troubles us in this world. It's nothing more than our own selfishness that troubles us. Swami says, self lives by, you know, getting and forgetting, Swami's taught us. Getting and forgetting, that's the nature of the self. Don't we spend our lives thinking about what else we can acquire, what we can accumulate, what's due to us, what we're entitled to? just examine, how quickly do we get that coveted wish before it quickly sours and becomes spoiled in our own minds, right? Before we've acquired it, it seems the most sweetest thing in the world. But how long before it's in your hand before the satisfaction withers away? Am I right? Even my high school students acknowledge this. I do activities with my high school students to explore the nature of their own happiness and suffering. And in fact, desire is very much root of our own suffering. I ask my children, my students, what things in this world really do you desire? I desire iPod. I desire new car. I desire nice job. I desire recognition. But then I just ask them, how much, if one car would make you happy, wouldn't two cars make you more happy? Yes, Mr. Hoffer, they all acknowledge, yes. What if I offered you not two, but three cars? What would happen to your happiness? It would go up even more, Mr. Hoffer, they all report to me. But if we follow the logical conclusion of such thinking, we can exaggerate and extrapolate up to 100 cars, right? How would you feel if I gave you 100 cars? And then slowly kids start to put their hands on, oh, maybe 100 cars might be too much, right? Of course, there'll be a few kids that, no, I'd be happy with 100 cars also, Mr. Hoffer. Right? 1,000 cars. What would you do with 1,000 cars? Where would you park 1,000 cars? Think of the cost you would be burdened with so much of cars. And no matter what thing we name, whether it's dosa, iPod, cars, the accumulation, at some point there is this diminishing return. I've never found a person to say, no, the thing you've named, Mr. Hoffer, will only create more happiness for me infinitely, no matter how much of it you give me. I've never found a person. Of all my students I ask, everyone acknowledges that there is this diminishing return effect when it comes to selfishness. Selfishness at some point fails to satisfy our yearning and desire, right? Even above materialism, recognition, or job promotion, same thing, right? From the outside, it looks something grand. Once you have it, you're burdened with its troubles. Self lives by getting and forgetting. No matter how much we get, we're never satisfied, and we forget the thing we thought, we forgot the feeling we thought we would have when we actually wanted it. But Swami says the other half is love lives by giving and forgiving. It's love's nature to give over and over, not once or twice, but consistently, unendingly. Love is giving in nature. Giving and forgiving. The mother, she gives everything to us. And no matter how much we complain, her love is never deterred. Right? Mommy, I don't want to have that for dinner. Could you please make something else? Lovingly, mother continues to give. Where are my clean shirts? Why can't my clothes be clean when I need them? Mother's love isn't deterred. Right? Even if we forget what she's done for us, she's still prepared to give to us. That's the nature of love, Swami says. Self lives by getting and forgetting, while love lives by giving and forgiving. How to then improve? How to shed this selfishness? Swami has also prescribed a very simple model for us to follow. And you've heard this teaching also. Swami describes satisfaction or happiness as like a house, where he says the foundation is self-confidence. The wall, the foundation is self-confidence. The walls of the house are self-satisfaction. The roof of the house, on top of that, is self-sacrifice. And then you have the mansion of self-realization. It's a sequence. It's a step-by-step process that Swami has prescribed. And though I heard that teaching 20-some years ago, it took years and years before I felt like I had any insight into what Swami means. How is it that we go from floor, walls, to roof and satisfaction? What is confidence, satisfaction, and sacrifice? What's the relationship between them all? And as I've thought about them over time, the meaning has become more clear to me, as it is so often with what Swami gives us. Right? The sweetness, the value of what Swami gives us, it becomes clearer, and the meaning becomes richer with time. Confidence, we go from confidence to self-satisfaction. From self-satisfaction to self-sacrifice. From self-sacrifice to self-realization. Self-sacrifice I can recognize there. Doesn't self-sacrifice sound very much like selflessness? It is. Sacrifice is the same thing as selflessness. Confidence. What place does confidence have in our own happiness? Doesn't confidence sound like selfishness? And self-satisfaction. Doesn't that very much sound like self-indulgence and selfishness? Right? I also struggled with this, what Swami taught us, for a long time. But as a school teacher, I'm able to see it externally. I can see the process in children, and it helps me to see it, actually. In a sense like this. I see life as kind of like a continuum like that. And that we all have to pass through these stages. You can't skip one and rush straight on to self-realization. You must first walk through the different stages. And I see it so well in the lives of children. The lowest level of performing children, those with the worst grades, those with the worst behavior, those with the most troubles in their lives, those that are least happy, most prone to discipline problems. I should say I teach high school. I teach 15 to 18-year-olds. And I teach in an urban school where, while some of our families are very rich, many of our families are very poor. So I see the full spectrum of human society in my classroom day by day. And the lowest level of performing students completely lack confidence. You can see it. If they sound tough, if they act tough, it's a show. Only to cover up their insecurities. Only to cover up the lack of confidence they have in themselves. It's lack of confidence they have. Swami says you can't have faith in God unless you first have faith in yourself. Life begins with self-confidence. Better performing students. Those students which have success on a regular basis. Success is the very definition of self-satisfaction. When you and I can go out into the world day by day and discharge our duties well. When we can meet the responsibilities before us. We can even secure our goals and aims in life. Whatever it is we aim to do, better performing people can do it by and large, can't we? I think mostly Sai devotees at least fall into this category, right? We have the confidence in this world to go out and be successful in whatever we aspire to. Right? That kind of self-satisfaction is the next stage. Right? Once you have confidence, then you can actually go out and achieve something in this world. Be it selfish or selfless. You must be able to go out and have the experience of being successful. To be able to do something. But isn't it true, brothers and sisters, that so many of us, our colleagues and ourselves included, isn't it easy to get stuck at that level? That level of self-satisfaction, where we have confidence and power to meet our needs and satisfy our desires. but yet we lack some basic satisfaction, right? How many of us do we know that can go out and acquire what we want and yet still not feel happy? That's stuck at the stage of self-satisfaction. But we can see in our society, and maybe if we're lucky, we've noticed in ourselves, that sometimes a feeling develops in us after some time. And that is the feeling that maybe I should give instead of take. See, that feeling that maybe I have enough, maybe rather than worry about myself, maybe I should worry about others. That feeling is only possible when a person has first had the experience of being satiated. Am I right? The unsatiated person is the most stingy of person, right? No matter what their bank account is, if the person feels unsatiated, by satiated I mean their desires are satisfied, when only the person who feels satiated will share, right? I know so many wealthy people who are completely stingy. Why? It's not for lack of resources. It's for lack of satisfaction. They have no genuine satisfaction. They've never satisfied their desires. That's why Swami says you must pass through self-satisfaction. And at some point we realize, feeding myself doesn't make me feel full. Feeding others actually gives me more satisfaction. Concern for others pleases me more than concern for self. In fact, concern for self only leaves me wanting more and more. Right? That's the progression that Swami's talking about. Selflessness is something we can cultivate and practice and aspire to. But usually we have to progress through these different levels. I'd like to share a few examples on this idea of selflessness. Selflessness has tremendous power, as Swami said. And I've had a few experiences that may be relevant to us today. Group dynamics. We today are in a group, is it not? Psi organization is a group. And in some ways, I've come to believe that one of the very best measures or indicators of a true healthy group is not what they can accomplish, not what big of program they can put on, not the number of sevas they can do, but the degree of selflessness that pervades amongst the group. Brothers and sisters, it's selflessness which is the true mark of a group of people. A true group, true unity, is marked by selflessness. Nothing else. It's selflessness. Right? In fact, I believe participation in Psi organization has that to teach us. Couldn't we all very well sit home and sing our old bhajans? We can. I can sing at home very well. I don't need to go to Psi Center for bhajans. Going to Psi Center, I may be irritated. Oh, why is he singing that same old song? He can't ever sing a new song? Come on, same old song. Why is her clapping off? She's clearly clapping off. Please play the talim correctly. Right? Once we're around other people, we feel irritated, right? It's easier to feel peaceful when we're alone sometimes. So why be together? Why join in groups? Why Psi organization? Because the experience of working together and cultivating unity and shedding selfishness for selflessness is the true spiritual growth Swami wants for us. So Swami doesn't need Psi organization. He doesn't need us for anything. He can fix us individually on his own. Right? He can do all the seva of the world without us. Wasn't he taking care of the world before we came along? Are we really doing something grand for Swami? Are we really relieving him of any burden or work that he can't do himself? No. It's for our own benefit to be together, brothers and sisters. And selflessness is the mark of a true organization. I learned this lesson most clearly in my days in Hyderabad. The sister explained that I spent a year in Hyderabad And that is true. In 1997 and 98, I finished my college in Hyderabad. And I had gone there to study Telugu for my university degree here in the U.S. But really, I was only just interested in being near Swami. I was ready to study any language. Sanskrit, Tamil, Bengali, Hindi, Kannada, I'm ready to speak anything. I'm ready to learn anything. I just wanted to be near Swami. I just couldn't stand the idea of being stuck in the USA. That's how I felt. In fact, I really felt bad that I had somehow got born in the U.S. I really bemoaned my condition. And so I did everything I could do to scratch, claw, crawl my way to India. And so I went there to study Telugu. But what I didn't know was that I was going to live with one of the most fabulous groups in the world. I'll brag and boast. This Hyderabad youth group I lived with was such an incredible group. And so the time I spent there was completely devoted to doing service. These are devotees who are very much karma yogis. They just want to work. And Swami has groomed them and cultivated this work in them. And it's such a beautiful thing to see. I fell into this group almost accidentally, I should say. I didn't know anything about them, only they volunteered to host me, and I graciously accepted their kind offer. I went to their home in Hyderabad for the first time in 97, and within 2 days, we were off on a bus to some remote place. I think we were in Karimnagar area, and went to this small area near Gajwell. I can remember even 3 days we spent in remote villages. We would get off the highway and drive on dirt roads for hours. That's how far we would be. We would go into villages, and I'm fairly sure I was the first white person that some of these people had seen walk into their village. I'm fairly sure there were not many before me who had shown up in some of these remote gramams of Andhra Pradesh. We worked consistently, morning till night, all varieties of work. I had no skill. We had medical camps, veterinary camps. We had Balvikas programs for the village children. And then in this one particular village, one specific unique problem they had was that in monsoon time, the road would get washed away. And so they would be actually cut off from town centers where they could get things they need. So they would literally get cut off. So my work, being unskilled, I was moving boulders to make a road. For 3 days we made this road. And it was such a beautiful work. All of our boys are there from the city, working hard, lifting rocks, putting them into tractors. And all of the villagers, seeing that townspeople have come, have all laid down their farming tools and have come to help build a road. Hundreds of us, all working together to build this road, lifting boulders and laying them. It was about a 300 to 500 yard road, I would say, that we laid. It was just crossing through this ravine, this creek bed. Every day we would be exhausted. We would just lay down under any flat place of ground, we would just lay down. Morning time, we would go to farmer's field. He'd switch on his bore well, and we would just wash there in his bore well. And back to work we went. And after 3 days, we get back on buses, and we go to Puttaparthi. There's two buses full of boys, and we all go to Puttaparthi. Now, I'd had experiences with Swami. I'd been to Puttaparthi before. That wasn't new to me. And I knew that Swami just doesn't, just because you show up, doesn't mean that Swami comes running to see you, right? Just because you came doesn't mean it's necessarily on Swami's to-do list for the day, right? So I came with modest expectations. All 70 of us, we show up at Puttaparthi. We wash, clean, put on white dress, and we all go and sit together. Boom. Big group of us. 70. And Swami directly comes up to this group. And I was just blown away immediately. The way the interaction went. So familiar. So affectionate. So free with each other. Swami said, "Ah, you've come, huh?" And they're very clear in their minds what their goals are. They want interaction with Swami. They want attention. They want interaction. They want His grace. They're very clear. And they're very forward also. "Ah, you've come," Swami asked. Yes, Swami. Please, Swami, you should call us for an interview. So Swami would sometimes tease them. Ah, same old boys, no new faces, just the same old people, Swami would say. And so they said, Swami, we've brought new boys this time. Right? They're ready to do anything. And Swami looks around, he says, they might be new boys to you, but they're old boys to me. But our group, they won't give up so easily. So on their knees, they're talking to Swami. Swami, yes, Swami, but please you should call us for an interview anyway. And Swami says, but you're so many, and the interview room so small. But he says, yes, Swami, but we know that if you will it, you can make that interview room bigger. That's the way they talk to Swami. And Swami looked and smiled. He says, I know. And off he went. I was blown away. We've just got there, and Swami's already talking to the group like this. What kind of group have I fallen into? I was really shocked to see the affection Swami had for these boys. And so our group left, and we went back to the sheds, and we had a meeting back by that agricultural building there, maybe you remember. And we sat out on this concrete stoop, all 70 of us. Mind you that, I should say that the interview room that we are talking to Swami about is not much bigger than one of these white sheets. This white sheet area where boys are sitting right now, the room is not much bigger than that, am I correct? That's the room, that's what we're trying to get 70 people into, okay? And so we had a team meeting, and the leaders of our group sat up and they said, boys, Swami's talking nicely to us. He's giving us attention. The signs are good that he wants to interact with us. But he may not be able to call us inside. There are too many people. Many of you boys have had interviews before. Some of you boys are new and have never had experiences with Swami. And so we ask you boys, if Swami can't call us all, are any of you willing to sit out the interview? And 100% hands went up. Every single boy, new or old, 100% boys raised their hand. They said, I'll sit out so that others can go inside. Selflessness is the sign of a true organization. That feeling that others are me. I need not think about myself. How can such a feeling be cultivated? It was only due to the love of the leaders. When leaders take care of the group, when the leaders put the needs of the group before themselves, then the group is ready to sacrifice anything for the leaders. And that was exactly the case. That was exactly the case. Many of these boys only had livelihoods because these leaders had created job opportunities for them to support their families. Many of the boys would quit their jobs to go for Grama Seva. When their bosses protested, no, you can't go for another Grama Seva, they said, Sai Ram, I'll look for a new job next week. And off they went. They just didn't care. The group was everything for them. That was the selflessness. That was the selflessness. But selflessness, if it can transform our organizations, if selflessness can elevate us from being an ordinary squabbling group of do-nothings to a refined group of high-impact workers, unified with a goal and a mission and a feeling of love, then also selflessness has the power to transform those outside of our group as well. That's the power of selflessness. It knows no limits. I'll tell another short story. When I was a young person, though I live in Colorado now, I grew up in Indianapolis. This place isn't new to me. I'm old to this place, actually. I used to come up here when I was a young boy, and I had the benefit of learning from so many of the elders who are from the Chicago area, some who are with us today. And when I was a young boy in Indiana, me and my brother and some of our youth group, we were just a small group. We had noticed one winter in downtown Indianapolis, climate similar to Chicago, maybe less wind, similar temperatures. We noticed one winter homeless people wearing plastic bags for shoes. I'd never thought of such a thing. In my life, I've never imagined someone would wear a plastic bag for footwear, and certainly not in the wintertime. It just broke our hearts. And so we resolved we would do something. And so we decided that next winter we would buy some boots and give them off. We were, both my brother and I were poor. We were both college students. We didn't have any money. But we just took a decision and said, we can't do nothing. And so we went to a shoe store and we went inside and we found somebody working there to help us. It turned out to be the store owner. He helped us. And we said, yes, sir, we would like to buy 75 pairs of boots. Well, his eyes get big. Huh? He's ready to give us the gold service, right? Gold level service, platinum level, elite shopper we became immediately. And so he's spending lots of time with us, and we're carefully going through finding styles that we felt like were most appropriate. We're completely exhausting his stock of everything, right? 75 pairs of boots we bought. And, you know, all this time goes by. He packs it, and he takes us to the register. And he just starts on his computer typing up the purchase. And he says, you know, boys, if you don't mind me asking, what are you going to do with 75 pairs of boots? He's just typing away. And we explained, sir, we're going to give these boots away to homeless people. We found that so many of them have inadequate shoes for winter, and we thought we would try and improve their circumstances. He just kept quiet, and he just kept doing his work. And then he said, boys, in my life, I've never had anybody come in and buy 75 pairs of anything. Never. Much less 75 pairs of boots to be given away. Free. I've never seen such a thing. And he just was working. He was finishing up our sale, helping us take it to the car. And he stopped us and he said, boys, I feel bad. I feel bad. I've charged you what I've charged you. I've given you the best discount I can give you. I'm taking, I don't know what profit he took, but he had given us some sale price. And yet still he felt compelled to talk to us. And he said, boys, next year, come back and we'll work together and I'll go to my distributors and I'll bargain with them and we'll get more boots for a better price and do more work all together next year. Will you do that, boys? And then he said one more thing. He said, this is Christmas time, and every year I invite my employees to bring their families in and to buy some things, to get something free from the store for their families. Boys, I want you also, please come and bring your families. Consider yourself like my family, and please come in and take advantage of this small thing. Will you do that, boys? Thank you, sir, we said, and off we went. The story actually goes on a little bit. The day of the service, we went downtown, and all of our youth, we had planned together, and we had said, we expect today could be a difficult day. Homeless people aren't always the most courteous people. And yet we should be prepared to serve them with love, patience. No matter if they feel rough, we should treat them with love. We should treat them better than anyone's ever treated them. That's what we should aspire to do. That's what Swami would want. We should serve them as if they are Swami himself. That's what we all said. Yes, we're ready to do it. I made an announcement at a homeless shelter. I said, excuse me, we're giving away boots at this church 2 blocks away if anybody's interested. And before I could finish, the room was empty. They all jumped up and stormed out like a stampede. They go there and they're all pushing, shoving, rah, me first, me first. But our youth were so loving. They were organized. But more than just organized, they were loving. They sat them down. Please, you sit down. While you're waiting your turn, they gave everyone a ticket, so there was some system. And while you were waiting, somebody would come and feed you. They would serve you something. When it was your time, our kids would remove the shoes and dirty socks themselves and throw those away. We ourselves would put new, clean, fresh socks on their feet. Lovingly, we would measure their foot to get the perfect size, like we were trying to treat them as well as we possibly could. And the crowd calmed down. Over time, they became soft, too. Until the end of the day, almost all the boots were gone. And I was helping one man, and he was just finishing, just leaving, happy to have his new pair of shoes and leaving behind something worn out and broken. And just as he's leaving, he sees one other homeless man sitting in a chair trying to find boots. But they didn't have his size. His size was exhausted. There were no more in his size. And this man walking out the door, he just looks down and he says, "My shoes are better than your shoes. You take these. I can get one more year out of these old shoes. Those shoes that you have are not so good. You please take the new shoes. I'll keep the old ones." And he lovingly handed them over to another homeless man and walked out the door. Brothers and sisters, such is the power of selflessness. It has the power to transform. It spreads like wildfire. Each and every heart in America, in the world, responds automatically to selflessness. That is the power, the majesty of Swami's love. In fact, more and more, when I think of love, I use the word selflessness instead. Selflessness, love has so many connotations in America, right? You see film star, ooh, I love her. Kit Kat chocolate bar. Oh, I love Kit Kat chocolate bar. All these things we say we love, it's misuse of the word love. Love means one thing. It means selflessness. It means no thought for self. That is love. Dear brothers and sisters, I'd like to try and bring this to a close. I'm sorry that on Ladies' Day, you're stuck with a man giving talks about ladies. But I hope that this lesson Swami has taught us of selflessness is relevant to our own lives. Spirituality need not be complex. Swami says, God is the simplest, and everything else is complex, Swami reminds us. Swami, we're so grateful for all that you did for us. My most loving pranams. Sai Ram. That afternoon, every boy raises his hand and says, "I'm ready to miss an interview." And so the leader said, "Okay, that's it." And afternoon came. So we all go back into Sai Kowant Hall. We all sit down there, 70 of us in a block. Again, immediately Swami comes right up to the group and immediately starts the same conversation. "Swami, you should take us inside." Mm-hmm. And Swami says, "Go." So we all get up, and you remember the tradition. Nobody would go inside interview room before Swami. If Swami says go, you would just go and sit on the veranda and wait for Swami. And we thought, Swami will probably take us into the Bhajan Mandir. As you remember, Bhajan Mandir is maybe four times the size of this room, right? Three times something. It could accommodate hundreds of people, the Bhajan Mandir. And so we thought, surely Swami will call our group inside the Bhajan Mandir. But no, ladies and gentlemen. Swami walks up, smiles, and opens up the door to interview room. And over 70 of us went inside the interview room that day. I wouldn't say that we sat comfortably.
I wouldn't say there was extra space. We were all pressed up on everything, each other and Swami too. We were just smashed in. And it was just the most beautiful occasion. Swami spent so much time. He wanted to hear all about the Grama Seva. And he would give just such beautiful advice. You should do Grama Seva like this. This thing you should do. You should always start with Naga Sankirtan so as to create sacred vibrations. Then you should do this. And when you talk to villagers, you should speak this way because they don't know this thing. And when you do this, you should do like that. And then finally we sang a song for Swami. We used to sing beautiful Telugu songs in these villages. And it was the Grama Sankirtanas used to be something just beautiful. In Puttaparthi, the Naga Sankirtan is very nice. But in the village, it's nicer, I would say. The villagers are joining with us. There's Palaki Seva, right? We're taking Swami by Palakwin. And Vedam boys are chanting in front. Every house we would go by, and the ladies would come out, pour water on our feet, break coconuts, offer agrabati. It was just a beautiful thing. Children are behind throwing crackers and dancing, and we're singing just beautiful songs. Devadostu nadu ramam bhaje, Sai Devadostu nadu ramam bhaje, Hey Devadostu nadu ramam, and we're like that. Rama Anuradha, Marukasari, Rama Anuradha, Marukasari. We'd sing like that. And we were singing these songs for Swami. He was just having a lot of fun. He was just happy. And then we sang this one song. I'll sing one verse of it because it's getting late.
Sai Mata Bidalam Mandaram, Satya Sai Mata Bidalam Meyandaram, Sai Mata Bidalam Mandaram, Satya Sai Mata Bidalam Meyandaram. Kalasivunte kaladusukam kalahiste dukkamayam, Kalasivunte kaladusukam kalahiste dukkamayam. Parasparam premidam paradushanam anedam, Parasparam premidam paradushanam anedam. Kula beda loddu manaku bhasha beda loddu, Kula beda loddu manaku bhasha beda loddu. Antarani tanam uddu andaram okatiga vundam, Antarani tanam uddu andaram okatiga vundam. Sai mata bidalam mandaram, Satya Sai mata bidalam me andaram. Sai mata bidalam mandaram, Satya Sai mata bidalam meyandaram. Deshamanti matti kadu, deshamanti manusulo, deshamanti matti ka, deshamanti man. Deshani premidam, tyagani chupidam. Tyaga. Pavitramuga jivinchi, pavana charitanu pandi. Swadhamana vidanadi, satya saini cherudam. Swadhamana vidanadi, satya saini cherudam. Manashaktani manamutalasi, yuvashaktani chatudam. Manashaktani manamutalasi, yuvashaktani chatudam. Grama grama lona sevalena chedam, sevalena na avikasta sadhyamulena, avikasta sadhyam. Okarinokuru cheru manamu swamini sevinchudam, okarinokuru cheru manamu swamini, okarinokuru cheru manamu swamini sevinchudam. Sai Mata Bidalam Mandaram, Satya Sai Mata Bidalam Meyandaram.
And Swami, we finished the song, and Swami was just like this. He didn't move for a long time. And then he looked down at us and he said, "Boys, my whole message is in this one song. Every village you go to, you sing this song. Here and there, everywhere you go, sing this song. Sing this song over and over. And then he said, come. And he took us outside, and he sat us on the veranda, and he said, sing the song again. So yes, Swami did call us inside the interview room. I'm here only for you. So if we've exhausted our time,